live from Washington, D.C. in the Rumble studio, of course. We've got tons of exclusive content we're dropping today. You don't want to miss it. Hours ago, we just launched our lawsuit against TSA. They're refusing to comply with our FOIA request, so we're pushing back. Congress is expected to take up a vote this week on FISA warrants. John Zdrosny joins us to discuss. In an exclusive you won't see anywhere else, Jeff Clark is sitting down with us to discuss his ethics trial that just took place here in Washington, D.C. Elon Musk is taking on Brazil's highest court. Paulo Figueroa joins us to discuss the censorship war. What do Chris Cuomo, Charlamagne the God, and The Rock all have in common? Well, they're all pretending to not be far left anymore. So what's the strategy here? Jason Whitlock joins us to discuss. All that and more on the Brianna Morello Show. Happy Monday, everyone, and welcome to tonight's program. We're so excited you're joining us here from the swamp, obviously. We're right now in Washington, D.C., in the Rumble studio, of course. We're so happy to be here. We've got tons and tons of content for you today. First up, of course, we've got to talk FISA, because right now it looks like the House is going to take up a vote on all of this week. But specifically, what's taking place here is a vote on whether or not the feds should get warrants, obviously. And, well, that's very important, something we talk about all the time. But a lot of our favorite congressional members are sounding off because, well, let's be honest, we all know this isn't going to pass. And Congressman Thomas Massie is the first one up who's telling you just that. In a tweet over the weekend, he said the U.S. government uses FISA to spy on Americans without warrants. This week, the House will vote to require the feds to get a warrant to snoop on Americans. Sadly, this vote is likely to fail. And then he says he really just wants this to be on the record, and rightfully so. But he's not alone, of course. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is also jumping in on all of this, saying that we have all of these unknown terrorists in America right now, and we can't have another 9/11 is what they're probably going to say to justify all of this. But let's be honest, folks, we all know, and she's being truthful here, talking about our unsecure border, that they don't care about those things. They just want to be able to spy on American citizens, and they're going to continue to allow anyone into our country without any regard. And obviously, Senator Mike Lee is also jumping in on this, saying FISA stands for Federal Investigator Stalking Americans, which, yes, we all know that is the case. And tomorrow, we should let you all know, for a programming note, Chairman Jim Jordan is actually going to be joining us, and we're going to be discussing this with him. But right now, we have one of our favorite guests joining us today, John Zdrosny of America First Legal. John, thank you for joining us. It's great to see you in person.
Same here, Brianna. Thank you for having me on. It's great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So, there's so much going on regarding FISA. Sadly, Congressman Thomas Massie is being open, and he's saying, I don't think this is going to pass. Mm-hmm. Do you think this has what it takes to make its way through Congress and to pass? Because I don't know either.
Well, I don't know. It really depends. I feel like based on what I've seen from Speaker Johnson and Chairman Turner, they seem to think it's going to pass. And unfortunately, the way they've operated from time to time is with Democrat votes. So I think really it comes down to one of two questions. Is this going to be a Republican-only victory? In which case, Mr. Massie is probably correct. It won't pass. Or are they going to pivot and rope Democrats in for the Spying on Americans Act, like you mentioned? I think then it would probably pass. Although, you know, you've never underestimate the ability of Democrats to not want to give a Republican a victory, even though they would want to vote for something substantively. I have to remember that Mike Lee thing. That's really great.
Yes.
The new acronym for FISA. That's pretty fantastic.
It is pretty fantastic because it's honest.
It's very accurate.
I mean, the fact that they're able to spy on thousands of Americans without having any warrants for this is pretty disgraceful in itself. Mm-hmm. But it continues to happen. And there's so many Republicans who aren't even speaking out about this. But there's also some Democrats who do support it, which I think is important too. They do speak out about this. And that's where I'm a little hopeful on all of this. But what's the legality behind this? Because it doesn't seem like FISA was even constitutional from the beginning, and I don't understand how this hasn't been challenged.
Well, that's a good point, Brianna. What's really frustrating, I think, is that you see a lot of people who are saying, well, this is the point of it, and we're not spying on Americans. And look, you and I both grew up in the shadow of 9/11. Mm-hmm. We saw what happened. We recognize that FISA, which was first passed in the 1970s, needed an upgrade, perhaps for the digital age, mm-hmm. to monitor foreign communications with foreign nationals. But what was pretty clear is possible for you to scoop up communications with Americans. I don't think any of us envisioned a day when the federal government would weaponize that against Americans only. Mm-hmm. In other words, we were having conversations about, you're picking up American communications with foreign nationals. How do we deal with their rights? How do we protect that? This federal government has just turned the cannons on the Republic. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, what I find really disappointing too is some Republicans are, and you know, I don't put the Democrats in this category, but some Republicans are very dismissive of it. Mm-hmm. But it's a legitimate concern. And if the last 7 years doesn't get these guys concerned about holes in the law, I don't know what will be. It'd be nice to see a court say, look, the rules are different for Americans. It's usually how they react in circumstances like this. And I'm not sure why we haven't had that decision yet.
Yeah, I've never understood that either, honestly. When we go through all of this and we're talking about what they've done with FISA, it's pretty concerning, especially how they've manipulated against their political opposition as well. And do you see this escalating? I mean, if we don't get this vote to pass, do you see the federal government really just escalating this more? Because now that they really know that there's no consequences for any of this.
That's always a concern, Brianna. I think it's a legitimate concern. But I think the masses of the world are not wrong here. And they're saying, look, this is problematic. We're okay voting no. We know you have other tools. It's not like it will hamper intelligence collection around the world. It won't. Mm-hmm. It's just a nice additional tool. It has allowed them to do certain things that I couldn't talk about. Mm-hmm. When someone is saying, look, the federal government has been weaponizing intelligence collection domestically, which we always thought was sort of a sacrosanct thing that you wouldn't do, and no one's taking it seriously, you know, the Thomas Masseys of the world are right to say, look, let's just wait. I'm perfectly happy having this debate for the next 5 years until we get it right. And he's exactly right.
Yeah, you know, it's so crazy to me because I remember heading into midterms, we heard all of these Republicans saying, oh, we have the power of the purse. We could try to push back on the weaponization. Right. And here we are now. We've given them the majority in the House, and they've done nothing for the American people. Where can we – yeah, you have something to say about that.
I'd be careful and polite, but I will say this. I don't think most Republicans understand that their primary – or you know, Democrats too in an alternate universe or even now. Mm-hmm. The power of the purse is the legislative power. It is mm-hmm. the real Article I power. Nothing else matters. Everything else is sort of window dressing. Mm-hmm. If you want to stop this nonsense, you cut off spending. I mean, I can't, you see the same press releases I see, Brianna. Mm-hmm. Chairman so-and-so says, Biden administration's blah-bitty-blah. I'm like, okay, we'll cut their funding.
Yeah.
Cut the agency's funding. Cut that secretary's paycheck down to $1. Mm-hmm. Start basically preventing them from being able to have people come into work every day. Cut the budget of the agency. Show them you're serious. And Congress won't do it. They just want the sound bite from a hearing or something. So maybe we'll get there someday. I think you've noticed the conservatives in the Freedom Caucus and I mean, Democrats get this too. That's the thing. Like they understand you want to shut something down, you cut off spending. They don't ever do that because they like to spend money. Their power comes from spending. The conservatives are at least saying, hey, look, maybe we should do this. And they're not in charge, unfortunately. We'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see it going well if they don't do something now, honestly, coming into November. I think most Americans are a little discouraged from it. And, you know, we'll have that discussion tomorrow with, you know, Chairman Jim Jordan about that, because I think it would be interesting to get his perspective on all of that. I want to jump into what's also happening this week. It looks like House Speaker Mike Johnson on Wednesday is going to be walking down the two articles of impeachment against Homeland Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas across the Capitol into the Senate. It looks like they're going to have to force Chuck Schumer's hand in all of this to take up a vote regarding impeaching him. Do you see this passing? Because I think this is dead on arrival.
Do I think Mayorkas will be impeached?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Removed. Removed. No.
Yeah.
He won't be removed. That was going to be an uphill battle the whole time because it required 67 votes out of 100 senators. That was never really going to happen. But that's not the point. I think the point of this was to make sure that he was impeached, that this trial did happen, and in some ways to force the national conversation about his complete and total failure. And, you know, maybe along the way, force a few Democrats and Republicans who don't think the border's an issue to take a tough vote and say, yeah, no, he's perfectly fine. I mean, I think that's what some Republicans were hoping for, that, you know, you'd get for example, a Senator Tester in Montana or something who's up for re-election mm-hmm. to vote no on impeachment. And then someone can use that at home for political reasons. But politics aside, the conversation about the border disaster needs to happen. You know, Biden's border bloodbath is largely unknown by a lot of people. You know, we eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. So you think, well, everyone knows about it, but they don't.
Yeah.
And I think this was one way to sort of get around the media censorship of the issue.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important too, because again, most Americans don't even realize what's happening right now. I mean, we are being invaded, and it's not just an over-exaggeration of words. We're trying to be dramatic. We are being invaded. These are not children who are coming into our country. These are not women looking for a better life. When we look at these images that the corporate media takes up, they're using that one little shot of a child with a mother coming into our country illegally. That's not what we're seeing. You talk to actual reporters who are there on the ground who aren't working for a corporate media outlet, they'll tell you this is an invasion of young men of military age who are looking to come to our country and potentially cause harm. And as we see time and time again, DHS and so many other agencies aren't doing the background checks necessary to make sure that we're okay here. And I don't know. Do you think Chuck Schumer obviously is going to have to put together this impeachment trial. Do you think he's going to try to get creative with how to go around this? I don't even think Democrats really want to go on the record on this.
I think you're right. I mean, there's only so much they can do, right? Yeah. They can basically, I think there's an option for putting forth a motion for dismissal once it's mm-hmm. presented. I think they can also sort of bury it and scuttle it over to some committee and have it die there, or have the vote in the committee and then it never gets to the floor of the Senate. There are only a couple senators who understand, regardless of political party, how important this is. What's really frustrating is that they just don't seem to want to have that conversation. I understand why Chuck Schumer doesn't want to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. What I don't understand is you've seen some Republican senators say, "I don't know why this is important, guys." I'm like, well, if you don't get it, I don't know what to tell you at this point. But I really do think they probably are going to try and kill it, but it may just be easier to have a quick, I'm trying to put myself in like a strategist perspective here. Like, just do the 2 days of trial, get through it, get the vote, move on. Because if you don't have the trial and it's buried somewhere in a committee, what good is that? Someone will always be banging on your door saying, why did you have to have this behind closed doors? Honestly, they've had their way with the media on this issue so far. So what would 2 more days be?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting seeing it all play out. I'm just so fed up with the theatrics at this point when it comes to just these fake impeachments. And we know they're not going to go anywhere. It's discouraging for the American people, because I think a lot of people at home right now are getting upset right now with the direction our country is headed in. And so we'll see how that all plays out. John Zdrosny, thank you for joining me in person. This was so good to have this conversation face to face.
Thank you so much for having me on. It is the same. Agree. Good to see you.
Thank you. I know. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Well, we have another federal agency refusing to comply with our FOIA requests. And well, this one is TSA. Now, many of you might recall on this show, we discussed in detail how TSA actually handed over the information regarding J6ers to have them all added to a federal watch list. And ultimately, several journalists were added to that watch list as well. And they were followed by U.S. Marshals. Now, we've covered this extensively on the show. I've reached out several times to TSA for comment, and they don't want to talk about it, of course. But I also followed up with a FOIA request on that, and that's Freedom of Information Act. I asked for all internal emails and communications regarding people like James O'Keefe, who ended up on the list, J.D. Rivera, and Taylor Hansen. And, well, ultimately what happened there? Well, they decided not to respond. So as a result, as of today, we've officially filed a lawsuit against TSA. In that lawsuit, we detail just that. Plus, we also demand the documents that we are entitled to regarding the illegals. They are flying in illegally throughout our country. Many of you guys might know, because we've reported that as well, TSA is allowing illegal aliens to fly throughout our country without identification. They're doing so with just DHS documents and nothing else. So we asked for all of those documents as well, and obviously they don't want to comply. So, well, what happens now? We sue, we're going to win, and we're going to keep going. We're going to get to the bottom of all this because, well, TSA has a lot of explaining to do, and they're going to continue to just pretend like it's not happening. But we know it's happening. And in fact, tomorrow, we're going to have a woman who's very well-versed in all of this. Sonia Blavosko is going to be joining us, and she's going to be detailing exactly what's going on, because she also got a response, and TSA is pretending again with Sonia that none of this is taking place. So again, folks, it's another lawsuit we've just filed. It's one of many, of course. We've also suing right now the VA for pulling benefits from January 6ers prior to their trials. And even after their trials, and they were only convicted of misdemeanors, they lost benefits when they were not supposed to. We're going to get to the bottom of that one as well. But here's the big part in all of this. Independent journalists need to keep pushing, because the corporate media is ignoring all of this. This is government overreach. This is weaponization of all of our federal agencies. And they're ignoring it because they want to play it safe. So it's up to independent journalists to push back. And if you want to support independent journalism, it's quite simple, folks. Head over to supportbree.com. That's our direct way of supporting us. And although we're not raising money for these lawsuits, I want to be clear about that. It helps our team get together, it helps me pay staff to read over these documents when we finally do get them and things of that nature. So when you're going over to supportbree.com, you're supporting our work. So if you want to support us directly, you head over to our page. You could become a one-time donor or a monthly donor, and you could pick any dollar amount you'd like. So we greatly appreciate everything that you guys do because, well, you're what keeps us going. You guys, I've said it once before, so I'm going to say it again. And under the Biden regime, I've never been more worried about my financial future. I called my good friend, Dr. Kirk Elliott, because I wanted to come up with a plan put in place to make sure I was secure. And he came with a plan for me to invest in silver.
I'm rich.
I've got my silver. I'm feeling so much better about my future. I highly recommend you give him a call and just chat with his team. 720-605-3900. Now you could also head over to his website if you'd like to schedule an appointment. It's KirkElliottPhD.com/Brianna. I just finished unpacking my latest MyPillow order, and guys, it is incredible. I just stocked up on the new MyPillow 2.0 line, and let me tell you something, when it's the MyPillow I'm using 2.0, or if it's the Giza bed sheets, I'm sleeping like a baby these days. And it's just not my sleep that's improving. Gia and Giuseppe, their sleep's improving on the MyPillow dog beds. They are loving them. I literally can't get Gia off of it because she's obsessed with it. My best friend Allie, I gifted her the new MyPillow slippers, and she can't take them off her feet these days. She doesn't feel like she's walking on clouds, especially after working in heels all day long. So if you're interested in improving the quality of life right now, you gotta head over to MyPillow.com. And if you want to secure up to 66% off, make sure you type in Brianna. That's B-R-E-A-N-N-A. You gotta head there now. They're going to sell out quickly. And you got to get your hands on these new products. Lawfare. We talk about it often on this show. It's when our rogue federal government goes after individuals because, well, they don't like what they have to say and they don't like that they're sticking up for Americans. And no one has been victimized of lawfare more than Jeff Clark, the former DOJ official, who is being targeted in two different ways, obviously, with the Fulton County prosecution. And he's also being targeted through the DC bar. Last week, we briefly discussed with Kane from Citizen Free Press the status of what's going on with Jeff Clark regarding his ethics trial here in Washington, D.C. His ethics trial was quite interesting, and Uncovered D.C. did a great job at exposing all of this, but it ultimately exposed a lot of election fraud that, or alleged election fraud, I should say, that was never really followed up with an investigation. And well, who was responsible for all of that? Well, none other than the former Attorney General, Bill Barr. There were so many things that came out during that trial, and I wanted to detail it in length. And, you know, there's nobody better to talk about this with than the man himself, Jeff Clark. Jeff joins us today to discuss, as your trial has concluded, you are the former U.S. DOJ double assistant attorney general, and you're also a senior fellow for the Center for Renewing America. Jeff, thank you for joining us. It's been a crazy couple of weeks for you.
Well, it's great to be here, especially in the new studio, Brianna. I'm glad you invited me.
Well, I'm glad you're here. There's so much to go through because we were watching this kind of play out. And a lot of it, I mean, I had already known that there was a lot of issues with Bill Barr and the lack of hustle in investigating anything at this point when it, in regards to election fraud. And I've spoken about it previously as well. But, you know, my FBI sources told me that even the FBI was shutting people down from investigating. One person did tell me specifically, who wants to remain anonymous, that he was actually let go of the FBI because he just simply put in writing that he wanted to look into the tips. And what should he tell his staffers who were working with him, his other fellow agents who were getting all these tips? What should he do with it? And so we know that there was a well-organized effort to shut down anyone who was looking to just investigate these tips that were coming in. And that was kind of the highlight of what we saw coming out of your trial with the ethics trial that was going on. And so I wanted to talk to you about that because I thought it was very, very interesting. Now, you're being accused of two different things. You're charged with Rule 8.4C, which is attempted dishonesty, and Rule 8.5D, attempted serious interference with an administration of justice. Now, for our audience, that's nothing. I wouldn't read into any of that. What ultimately is happening is, Jeff, they're trying to go after you for just the idea that you would potentially look into election fraud claims that were coming in, and they didn't like that. So I believe this is an effort to silence you and silence anybody else that wants to come forward. But I want to bring everyone's attention to a soundbite that was really, really interesting that came out. It is of operation security expert Harry Howery. Now, ultimately, he's detailing how he wanted to help out, get a whistleblower status for a USPS contractor named Jesse Morgan. Now, Jesse Morgan was somebody who transferred ballots from New York to Pennsylvania. And, well, Harry was somebody who was in the room while there was a call with Attorney General Bill Barr. Have him explain to you exactly what took place.
Well, who called who?
Bill Barr called Tony Schaefer.
The former Attorney General, Bill Barr?
At that time, he was the Attorney General.
All right, sir. And tell us about that conversation.
It was relatively irate, and he was telling Tony Schaefer to stand down on this investigation. It was not a long call.
And what was the response to that directive from the Attorney General?
It was kind of ambiguous, but it was sufficiently strong to say that the evidence had already been found, and the response was, "I told you, you need to stand down on this."
And
the conversation was not long. It was agitated, to say the least.
Okay, so Harry's saying that he heard him say to stand down. Jeff, did anyone at the DOJ ever tell you to stand down from investigating any of these tips?
Well, that's a question, Brianna, that goes to all the privileges that are hemming me in. Let me put that off for a second, and let me just summarize for your viewers that there is either in the public record or in testimony from my trial three separate incidents where former Attorney General Barr shut down investigations. One is that Bill McSwain, who was the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, that's Philadelphia, my hometown, where my mom, who was a poll worker, certainly watched various shenanigans through the years and would bring home those stories to me. So this is not a topic that I had no prior exposure to. I also applied to clerk for a federal judge, Clarence Newcomer, who had a major election non-integrity case in Philadelphia, which he helped expose and shut down, called the La Nueva Forma, the new way to vote, which involves sort of something like absentee ballots before they were actually illegal, going door to door to collect them. And that was a no-no under Pennsylvania law at the time. So in any event, back to Bill McSwain. He was the U.S. attorney in Philadelphia, and he said that he had very important and credible election fraud information that he wanted to pursue. And so he went to Barr, and he asked if he could investigate it. And Barr told him, no, don't investigate it. And if you find anything, or you've already found anything, turn it over to the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, who had already pre-announced, Brianna, that that Trump was going to lose in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So this was like a road to nowhere. And, McSwain said, look, I'm a military guy. I saluted, even though I disagreed with it. Now, later, after he left office, after Biden had been inaugurated as president, I think in June of 2021, if memory serves, he sent a letter to President Trump where he exposed this episode. And we tried to get him in as a witness. More on that in a second. The other two episodes are the Jesse Morgan episode, where Colonel Tony Schaefer, who was in military intelligence, was ordered to stop his investigation of that incident and other incidents by Bill Barr. We did get that testimony in through expert and fact witness Harry Howery. He wore both of those hats. And then the third incident is one that that Matt Gaetz gave to us, because his former law partner, Larry Keefe, was the U.S. attorney in one of the districts of Florida. And there had been allegations that Andrew Gillum, who had run for governor, Democrat, was engaged in election shenanigans. Larry Keefe wanted to investigate that, and Bill Barr told him to shut that down. So we got two of the three incidents in. Now let me circle back. Why didn't we get the third one in? Why didn't we get the McSwain letter in? We asked for permission from DOJ to have both Larry Keefe and Bill McSwain, two former U.S. attorneys in the Trump administration, to come in and testify. and DOJ blocked that. They blocked that under something that I'm sure, you know, you got to bear with me for some of these legalese kinds of things. But there's a Supreme Court case called TUHY, T-O-U-H-Y, and it's led to a series of TUHY regulations. Most departments, the Justice Department's no exception, have TUHY regulations. And if you want to subpoena either a current or former official from that department, in this case, two U.S. attorneys, you have to get that department's permission in order to bring them in. So we were blocked from getting that permission. Meanwhile, Mr. Fox, the disciplinary counsel in D.C., he was able to get the permission to have me testify if I had so chose at this trial. And for Rosen and Donahue, two DOJ officials who were running the department at the end of the Trump administration, to come in and testify. So it was a total double standard, right? Rosen and Donahue can come in to testify against me. I'm exposed potentially to testify, but Keefe and McSwain, two former U.S. attorneys with stories to tell in my benefit, magically Biden administration said, no, they're not going to be able to testify.
Well, that sounds about right. Not that it's ethically correct, but it sounds like they're it's right, given everything that we know right now, that they're really just trying to do a cover up. I mean, there's no other way to look at this. We try to speak to people about things openly, and I'm constantly getting shut down, and nobody wants to talk about these things. But I'm assuming, just based on the position you're in right now, that you are feeling this extremely worse than the rest of us are. But we all want to still talk about it. I know a lot of people say, you know, 2020 is in the past, but it's not in the past, because number one, you're still dealing with the issues from 2020, but we're also going to be dealing with these issues heading into November, and it's going to happen. And then we're going to have people again, not willing to step up. And I feel like they're making an example out of you, Jeff. We're going to have an issue right now where, let's say President Trump decides to challenge the election, hypothetically. He's not going to find attorneys to want to represent him and help him push this through, because everyone's going to see what's happening to you, what's happening to Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, and all these other people who have just simply stepped on and done what they're supposed to do. And that is to represent their client, to represent the president of the United States, and just to represent the American people, because we all want clarification in our election. Why do you think, or this, it's possibly speculation, so you could pivot if you need to, but why do you think Bill Barr was going around shutting these things down? Because it seems so strange, because, you know, I remember Bill Barr, from the outside looking in, he seemed like he was somebody who aligned with us. And then to see him completely shutting down any type of election integrity investigation, it just doesn't seem like something that fit his kind of MO.
That's another question that I should reserve for a later time.
I figured that was going to happen.
stay tuned, Brianna, on that point. You know, let me say this. I think that you're right, that one reason why they're engaged in these lawfare persecution efforts, and actually, I think we really do need a term that's stronger than lawfare, like, you know, legal destructionism or something. I don't know what the right term is. I'll put my thinking cap on. Lawfare sounds too soft almost for what's going on. But I think the reason why they're doing this is to chill lawyers as to future election controversies. And it's not just election controversies, right? If they can do this over an election controversy, they can do it over a controversy about abortion policy, or they can do it over a controversy about foreign affairs and, you know, positions lawyers take in connection with that. They can do it as to the power of the administrative state in terms of some of the cases that have gone to the Supreme Court. They can just try to do this for anything where a lawyer is going against what the establishment wants, what the orthodoxy is. And then the second thing is, I think, you know, for maybe this is relevant to Rudy Giuliani, because back in the Reagan administration, he'd actually been the number three official in the Justice Department, the Associate Attorney General. And because I'd been in the Justice Department before, I think it's certainly relevant to me. I think that the other objective they have is to try to damage me so badly so that it would be more difficult for me to go back into the Justice Department. And I certainly know how that place works. And, you know, you could bring in someone from the outside and they'd spend the first 6 to 8 months just trying to figure out all of the different entities and how they fit together.
Yeah, there's a massive effort to just kind of discredit you. But again, folks, in the lead, and I told our audience that you worked in two different departments. Like, this wasn't, you weren't somebody who they didn't think highly of, because Bill Barr would have made sure that you didn't have all of that authority to do so. So I think it's laughable now when they try to take these attacks against you and try to bash your credibility here, because you are someone who's highly credible. And even before I got to meet you and got to know you, I did some research. I asked around, and everyone really liked and respected you during your time over the DOJ and other jobs that you took on. So it's discouraging to see it happening to you, because everyone speaks so highly of you, like I mentioned. But they also know that when President Trump is elected in November, that you're going to be someone who's going to be a really important person to push forward the DOJ's agenda, his agenda with the DOJ. And I think that's also another reason why they're doing all of this. So it's interesting to see it play out. But Jeff, during your time over the DOJ and during the transition after the election, what were some of the most, I guess, whatever you can talk about, anything egregious that you saw that you think that the American people should really know about right now? Because we got to be prepared for what's going to happen in November.
Well, I think that the American people have a sense of this when terms like the deep state and the administrative state have become popularized. And I should say, sometimes I have this argument with Steve Bannon a little bit, because his view is that the right term is administrative state, and it's not a deep state because it's in your face. And so administrative state is a better term. I actually distinguish between the two terms. I think the administrative state is the career bureaucracy, the sort of institutionalized fourth branch of government that really doesn't have a lot of turnover once a new president comes in, and that can be very resistant, and more on that in a second, to political direction if it's coming from a Republican president. Mm-hmm. The term deep state I reserve for the intelligence community. And I think also it's a thing that isn't just purely governmental. I think it straddles certain elements of the so-called elite media. And also I think it's an internationalist entity in a sense. And so, you know, this is why we get things like the war in Ukraine, and the fact that the Uniparty seems like desperately to want to have this war. Yeah. They are constantly preaching a message that President Trump is anti-democratic. He's going to mean the end of democracy, but they're supporting a war in Ukraine where Zelensky isn't even holding elections. Yeah. So there's just a complete contradiction. They're censoring, they're working with big tech to censor. It's public-private partnership of censorship. These things are the things that are fundamentally anti-American, anti-democratic. Those are the things the deep state does. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I encountered many ways in which the deep state was doing things like that. You know, one of the other things we asked for permission to do was to get declassification of the intelligence community report that was done about foreign election interference pursuant to a Trump executive order that was issued. And, you know, they had a report deadline of, if I'm remembering correctly, something like December 16th of 2020, They totally blew that deadline. They didn't put the report out until after the Biden administration was in place. And, you know, the just to show you how totally screwed up this is, right? The head of the intelligence community is the director of national intelligence, right? Who at the time was John Ratcliffe. So John Ratcliffe dissents from the report of the intelligence community. It's his intelligence community, right? I don't know of any other situation in which someone who's essentially the boss dissents from what the career people are saying. And that's the position that we wind up in. So, you know, I encountered that as one example. And I would say, you know, there were several incidents of rank and subordination, even by the lawyers who reported to me. Yeah. I was able to shut down most of them, and more of them occurred in my service in the Bush administration than in the Trump administration. I think they realized that I wasn't a person who was going to tolerate that sort of thing. But look, you know, we had leaks all over the place. We had like Mr. Anonymous, the guy who was chief of staff at DHS. You know, just there are so many people who crept in either as infiltrators or as never Trumpers, just sort of biding their time. And I'll suggest to you that that's probably part of, but I don't think all of the explanation as to Bill Barr, in that, you know, he helped Trump to solve the Mueller problem. But I think by that time, everyone realized the Mueller thing and Russia gate was all a lie by that point anyway. But, you know, I just think he's came up through Bush 41, right? Like that's the kind of mindset he has. Trump entirely different. And so I think that, he managed to maneuver himself into becoming attorney general for a second time, but I don't think he was ever really fully down with the Trump agenda.
Interesting. Interesting. I mean, you would know better than anyone. So that's why we ask you these questions. It's really interesting to hear. I mean, so many times we talk to people, we see them on TV, you don't really get the full gist of it. So I appreciate that honest take. I want to talk again about the hearing that wrapped up. The committee is now saying that you violated at least one ethic rule, but they're not being specific on which one you violated. This whole process has been about a 6-month process for you. Where do you go from here? How does this all play out?
Oh no, it's longer than that. It's already like a 3.5-year process. We've been fighting with them. And my case began before John Eastman's case began, significantly before.
Yeah.
Part of it was under seal from October of 2021 until July of 2022. The case was under seal and we were fighting at the DC Court of Appeals. And the issue we were fighting about is an issue that I won in February and then a decision issued on March 15th. So just think about that. We were fighting about an issue of whether I could be subpoenaed for documents or whether that violated my Fifth Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. And it took until March 15th for a published decision to issue on that of this year. That's how long the battle's been going on. And that's how much the legal expenses have been mounting up, mm-hmm. Opportunity costs of my time that could be spent in other ways preparing potentially for a new administration. And look, let me say this. This is something that should have resulted in the case being thrown out from the start. In the very first call that my lawyer, Harry McDougald, whose voice you heard on the clip you played from Harry Howery about the bar stand down order to Colonel Schaefer, because he was in the room. Harry talked to Mr. Fox, the disciplinary counsel, Hamilton Phil Fox III, in DC. And he indicated that I would be standing on my Fifth Amendment rights because I had recently done the same as to the January 6th committee. And his subpoena was basically just a rejiggered version of that subpoena. Mm-hmm. And I successfully resisted the January 6th committee and their threats to hold me in criminal contempt, like happened with poor Peter Navarro and luckily Steve Bannon, he gets to, still stay out pending appeal, whereas Peter didn't get that benefit. And so what did Mr. Fox say to Harry? He said, if you fight this, I will ratchet up the discipline on Clark. Don't give me this Fifth Amendment stuff. And, that's a violation of my constitutional rights right there. And ultimately the DC Court of Appeals held that his subpoena just from the outset was a violation of the Fifth Amendment. So we have someone who's the chief ethics investigator and enforcer in the District of Columbia, and he's the one violating the Constitution. And I stand, accused of all these things when I've had, I think, an enviable and unblemished career up until this point.
Yeah. And everyone speaks highly of you, Jeff. So it's not like you're somebody who they don't speak highly of. And it's just interesting that it's all coming about. It's not just coming about, but it's just interesting how they're going after you. I think it's overly aggressive, but I think it's to prove a point. And so many people are paying attention to what's happening right now in our country. Jeff, I mean, we continue to have these discussions all the time. And like you mentioned, this is a very expensive process. The goal here is to drain Jeff financially between the Fulton County prosecution and this. So if you guys would like to head over to his GiveSendGo page, it's Jeff Clark Legal Defense. That's so important, guys. We have to keep pitching in and helping folks like Jeff out. So whatever you could give, please head over there right now. Jeff stood up for the American people, and so we can't continue to allow this to take place, and we can't turn our backs now. Jeff, thank you for joining us. I know this was a crazy, crazy couple of last weeks for you, given everything that's gone on, and I know it's not done yet. So we appreciate you jumping in with us today.
Well, thanks, Brianna. I really appreciate you having me on. I hope people do think about going to the givesendgo.com/Jeff Clark. site, and look, the Lord is helping me here. And my dad and my mom, whole family really taught me that you have to stand up for what you believe in and that you can't be cowed. And so I'm going to keep fighting because it is what I believe to be the oath to the Constitution that I swore to, and I'm going to uphold it.
That's great, Jeff. That's what we need. We need more people like that. And that's the problem. So many people back down and they abandon the American people. But that's not what you're doing. That's why we need to go out there and support him. So again, folks, head over to his GiveSendGo page, please. And whatever you could donate to his legal defense fund is greatly appreciated. We'll be right back. Are you struggling to get a good night's rest? Well, you're not alone. Millions of Americans are struggling through a sleeplessness epidemic right now. And you don't want to rely on things like melatonin because, well, over time, you become a little dependent on melatonin. So we've got a safer solution for you. It's from our good friends over at the Wellness Company. They have this restless sleep formula. It was crafted by awake doctors who understand the harms of melatonin, like our favorite doctor, Dr. Peter McCulloch, and the group over at the Wellness Company, of course. It's called the Restful Sleep Formula. It is an all-natural alternative to melatonin. It's packed with ashwagandha, kava, passion flower, and so much more. This powerful capsule has everything you need for a deep night's rest. And here's the kicker, folks. With Restful Sleep Formula, you're actually going to save up to 56% compared to buying all these supplements separately. Plus, just for listening to our show today, folks, you're also going to get 10% off and free shipping when you use promo code Brianna. That's BREANNA. That's going to get you 10% off plus free shipping. So you got to head over right now to twc.health/Brianna. That's twc.health/Brianna and use promo code Brianna to get this great product. I'm telling you, folks, you're going to sleep like a baby on this. It's incredible. It's a natural supplement. So you're going to want to give this one a shot. So again, head over to twc.health/Brianna. Elon Musk is taking on free speech to, well, the fight to a whole nother level right now. He's battling it out with some of the highest courts in Brazil. And well, it was quite interesting seeing it all play out on social media over the weekend. Joining us to explain everything that took place, of course, the award-winning journalist, Paulo Figueiredo. Paulo, thank you for joining us. I know you've been super busy. Elon Musk even tweeting at you over the weekend because, well, this is something that's right up your alley. You're somebody who has ticked off all the right people in Brazil, and you're heavily censored by the Supreme Court in Brazil. So give our audience kind of a breakdown. What exactly took place this weekend, and what is the court really telling Elon Musk that he has to do?
Thanks for having me, Brianna. It's a lot to unpack. Well, the censorship has been going on in Brazil for quite some time. I've been in the show telling the viewers what's going on in Brazil. And Brazil right now is not a democracy by any measure. And it's one of the countries where the censorship is most advanced in the world. We've been seeing a crackdown of free speech all over the world. That's very strong in Canada. You saw how the Canadians changed their legislation on social media, how that was like crazy. German did the same. Israel has some problems on that area as well. Ireland, the whole world is going that way a little bit. And even in the U.S., we had the Biden administration trying to create the misinformation board and we saw it, the behind the scenes of the deep state influencing the social media companies to crack down on pretty much conservative free speech. It's unfair to say they're cracking down on all free speech because it's focusing only on conservatives. They don't do anything. If you're a terrorist, if you're the dictator of Venezuela, it doesn't matter. You have free speech. The only people that does not have free speech are conservatives. So that's in the background. That's been going on for quite some time. Matt Allen dos Santos, journalist under exile here in the U.S., but his name on Interpol red notice list. You have my case, which I've been living in the U.S. for the past 10 years, but I had all my social media blocked in Brazil, my passport canceled by the Brazilian government, my assets frozen in Brazil, and all that as a journalist, just for crimes of opinion, for criticizing the electoral system. So this started, and we've been trying to bring attention to that for quite some time. We had a hearing, supposed to have a hearing in the U.S. Congress. You remember that? Then the Democrats tried to block the hearing. I've been going to several shows trying to explain what's going on in Brazil because people don't know. And that's how things were. And then on the past week, things started to change dramatically because the U.S. journalist Michael Schellenberger, which is not a conservative by any measure, published the Twitter files versions of Brazil. And What the Twitter Files Brazil shown is that there's a justice in Brazil, this guy, Alexandre de Moraes. He's the a justice of the Supreme Court and at the same time the president of the Superior Electoral Court, which is the centralized federal court that does oversees and audits the whole electoral process in Brazil, which, by the way, is fully electronic with no paper trail. So it can't be really recounted. So this guy right there, he looks like a James Bond villain or Voldemort or Darth Vader. He's the guy that I'm talking about. So well, the Twitter Files Brazil shown is that unequivocally it was that this guy was ordering all the social media platforms to censor conservative content. He was asking to shadow ban certain hashtags that demanded more transparency on the electoral process. He was ordering to shadow ban conservative figures. He was ordering to censor bluntly members, even members of the Brazilian Congress, journalists like myself and Alan dos Santos and others. So, and it was very weird that we found out that he was trying to shadow ban the conservative voices and at the same time leave the leftist voices free, and the supporters not was being were being censored while the supporters of Lula were free to talk. And Schellenberger's published that, and that was the start of it, because the Elon Musk reposted it, and he started to antagonize Alexandre de Moraes. And he's apparently, from what Musk said actually today, he did that because he started receiving new orders from de Moraes, and the orders were to censor members of the politicians, to censor journalists like myself, but in a different way. So what de Moraes was asking was to Twitter to change their terms of service, or X, to change their terms of service in order to ban people globally, because my social media is banned in Brazil, but if you're outside of Brazil or accessing through a VPN, you can still access my content. So de Moraes thought that wasn't good enough. He wanted Twitter to change their terms of service, and then I would be in violation of their terms of service, so I would be banned globally by the platform. So, and I wouldn't know that this was a judicial process. So this would all be a secret, and it would look to the world that Twitter did that, and just the or X. And the funny thing is that the only person that went against it was Elon Musk. So he started the all the, it means Google, Facebook, Meta, WhatsApp, Telegram, all the others, so even Uber, all other social media, they accepted it with no complaints. They're like, okay, we'll do it gladly. It's like, we like censoring people. Musk was the only one of the big mainstream that went against it. So then he started to criticize de Moraes and say his order was illegal. He posted on that. And so I saw one of his posts, and we've been talking through intermediaries, mutual friends, and I just replied to him, like, so if the orders are illegal, why comply? You should do the same that Rumble and Locals did. They yes. took a stance. So, and you're powerful enough to make a difference. And that's when he replied that. He said, we're lifting all restrictions. This judge has applied massive fines, threatened to arrest our employees, cut off access of to acts in Brazil. But he said, well, principles matter more than profit, which I think is very noble. So right now, that was on Saturday. So far he hasn't lifted the restrictions, so we're still waiting for him to make good of his word. But on Monday, immediately, actually on the weekend, the FCC said they were ready to shut down Twitter in Brazil. They would ban X completely on the Brazilian territory, so Brazil would join the selective group of countries without acts, which is, I believe, is compliant of maybe China, North Korea, not even Venezuela. Venezuela still has acts. But Brazil would join the selective group of dictatorships that where acts is banned from.
And yeah, I think it's in, and, yeah, go on.
And there's a lot more to unpack. He's been included on the same Alexandre de Moraes included Elon Musk on the same probe that I'm in of spreading misinformation. It's a probe that's conducted by the Supreme Court of Brazil, and Alexandre is the Chief Justice conducting it, the rapporteur of the probe, and it's completely legal. But now Musk is under investigation in Brazil for crimes of misinformation, and that's very crazy. It's very hard to explain.
Yeah. Well, it looks like he's opened the investigation to obstruction of justice and incitement to crime, according to ALX on Twitter right now. And I think that's just interesting in itself, right? We're watching as Brazil is rapidly losing just freedom of speech. I know there have been issues in the past, but it seems like it's been escalating since Bolsonaro stepped down, because we've talked about it before on the show, all of the issues that you've gone through personally as a journalist. But how did the Brazilian people feel about all of this? Because this seems to be happening, like it's amping up a little bit more. So how are they feeling about this, potentially losing Twitter?
Well, it's not. So it's I like saying that this burst the bubble of many people were living in. Yeah. Because until now, you know how people are. It's the same in the U.S. Some people are just taking care of their lives. They don't follow politics. They don't know what's going on. They say that Brazil is a dictatorship. Well, they haven't been arrested. So for them, life goes on and nothing changed. Well, if Paulo had his social media taken down, well, maybe, I don't know this guy, maybe he did something wrong. I don't know. They're saying he did something wrong. He might have done it. So some people think like that. Some people are like, oh, this guy has opinions or is too extremist. And you know me, I'm not an extremist by any measure. But that's how people behave. They just move on with their lives. But when you see something like that, Twitter has roughly 30 million users in Brazil. It's fairly big. And when you have something like that, what happens is that the bubble is they burst the bubble. That's it. That's the best way to put it. And that's what's going on. I think everyone now is concerned with the possibility. Twitter or X is very used by people that are really powerful. They get let me put it this way: the financial markets in Brazil, most of the news they get is from X. Same thing with the journalists. Journalists are addicted to X. Even government agencies and government people use X. The funny thing, and that's very funny, is that Demorais, the justice who started all that, the only social media platform where he has an account is X. He doesn't have a Facebook account. He doesn't have a YouTube account or whatever. He's just on X. So it's very mainstream in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And I think people are it was a game changer. Right now, it's becoming very clear, not only to Brazil, but to the world, that what we have been talking several times here on this show is absolutely true. So Musk had the power to bring this to the center of the discussions. So now what we need to do is, if he's going to make good of his promises, if he's actually going to lift all the restrictions, if it does that, what's going to happen is two things are going to happen. The first one is that X will be banned in Brazil for sure and will be completely shut down. The second thing that will happen is that the Supreme Court justice will pressure the Congress to pass a bill regulating social media. And that's the bill's on the floor. It didn't have enough votes to pass on the House and on the Senate, but the president of the Senate is saying that regulation of social media is now inevitable after what happened. So this, we still have a lot to see of what's going on.
Yeah, we do. Just to give our audience some insight, let's say Elon Musk does hold the line and refuses to give in. Is there any consequences? Let's say Elon Musk one day wants to go to a convention in Brazil and he travels there. What might happen to him for traveling there or any of his employees?
It can be even worse than that, because look, this is the thing. The Moraes can issue an arrest warrant against that would be unlikely but possible. Yeah. The Moraes can issue an arrest warrant against Elon Musk. The moment he does that, his name is going to be put on the Interpol red notice list. So while he's in the U.S., this doesn't mean anything. The Interpol has no jurisdiction in the United States. But the moment he steps on a plane to travel internationally, he will be detained and arrested. So,
wow.
Yep. So he has that type of power. So one of the things it needs to be discussed is, should Interpol keep adding the names that Demarais persecute to the red notice list? Or does this falls on the political persecution exception that Interpol has? And that's something interesting. The funny thing is that Demarais can put his name on the red notice list, and Interpol only publishes around 30% when the country's one of the names that are on the red notice. So I might have my name under the red notice without knowing it. So the only way to find out is when you cross the airport, the customs. That's when you get flagged and then you get detained.
Yeah, that's really scary to think about.
I don't think anyone other than me here on this show said that.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary to think about it. I mean, they're ramping up so quickly, though, Paulo. I don't really hold anything back. I think that they would use any type of tool at their disposal to go after anyone who pushes back, because they want to make an example out of people like Musk, who are sticking up for free speech all around the world. I mean, we shouldn't be taken lightly, but when Elon Musk purchased Twitter, he really did save free speech, and he is the last line of defense. I truly believe that, because if he does give in, it's over for all of us. And we're learning all of the harassment that happens behind the scenes to all these big tech companies to comply. And it's just disgusting to see. I want to remind our audience, you do host a show here on Rumble as well. But if you're looking for a good follow to keep following this, you do a good job keeping up with this, especially in English, over at Twitter. So head over to his Twitter page. It's Real P. Figueroa. It's on Twitter as well. We've got your Twitter feed up right now, and it's also in the description below. Paulo, it's always great to speak to you because you're so insightful. So we greatly appreciate your time. You guys, I've said it once before, so I'm going to say it again. Under the Biden regime, I've never been more worried about my financial future. I called my good friend Dr. Kirk Elliott because I wanted to come up with a plan put in place to make sure I was secure, and he came with a plan for me to invest in silver.
I'm rich.
I've got my silver. I'm feeling so much better about my future. I highly recommend you give him a call and just chat with his team. 720-605-3900. And you could also head over to his website if you'd like to schedule an appointment. It's KirkElliottPhD.com/Brianna. I'm noticing a trend these days, and all of those talking heads who were once super far left are getting or making their way towards the middle. And it's a little suspicious, but don't take my word for it. Take a listen.
And I have never publicly endorsed a presidential candidate or a vice presidential candidate in my life, over my career. So I figured let's kick this conversation off this way by me officially publicly endorsing you both to become president and vice president of our great country.
Thanks, oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
The endorsement that I made years ago with Biden was one I thought was the best decision for me at that time. And I thought back then, when we talk about, hey, I'm in this position where I have some influence, and it's my job then. I felt like that then. It's my job now to exercise my influence and share with this is who I'm going to endorse. Am I going to do that again this year? That answer is no.
It is the gift of ultimate clarity about this outgoing president. Democrats, independents, real Republicans, you all now know, just based on the last 24 hours alone, this guy is the worst ever. He is the worst president we have ever seen.
You know, in terms of who I'm going to vote for, I would really have to see where we are at that moment in time. And
so you're open to a Trump vote?
I am always open. And I'll tell you this. People say, oh, bullshit, you've never voted for a Republican in your life. Wrong. And not only have I, the first vote I ever cast was for a Republican.
Did Hillary Clinton make a mistake calling Trump supporters deplorables? Of course. Of course.
Boy, do they hate it when we talk to each other. Who? The establishment.
Donald Trump is a fascist who does not care about democracy in any way, shape, or form.
So you think it would be dangerous for the country if he were to get back in the White House?
I think that's an understatement. An
influential radio host named Charlemagne the God says he regrets backing Biden in 2020. He told Politico, quote, "It's almost like Democrats are doing this purity test. America's not pure. The people of America are not pure. We're flawed. I'm not looking for my politicians to be pure. I'm looking for my politicians to be effective."
So why the sudden change in heart? Well, joining me to discuss is Jason Whitlock. He is the host of the Fearless podcast with Jason Whitlock, of course. Jason, thank you for joining us. Listen, you put out this tweet. And it really got me going because I was very suspicious with Chris Cuomo coming forward and appealing to the audience as if he's a moderate. But I remember during the pandemic, he was super against the unvaccinated and all of his aggressive language that he's used towards President Trump over the years. But now he's trying to, you know, appear like he's going towards the middle these days. Do you think these folks are just having a change of heart, or is there something else into this?
No, I don't think they're having a change of heart. I think they've been given a change in the marching orders and strategy. And I think they've seen the comedian Bill Maher and the HBO host have a lot of success criticizing and mocking the left while never changing his position on support of the left. And many conservatives go goo-goo for Cocoa Puffs. Oh, Bill Maher, he criticized the left. He criticized the left. But his position has never changed. He still is arguing that, you know, look, what the Democrats do will make you sick, but what Donald Trump represents will kill you. Of course, that's a lie and an exaggeration. And so, but he's had success with this message, and he appears like the rational leftist. And so his real job is, and all these guys' real job is, when they finally do replace Biden on the ticket, they want to have distance from Biden and want to appear like Michelle Obama or Gavin Newsom or whoever they install at their as their last-minute presidential candidate. Hey, we're the rational leftists who you halfway like and respect. And, man, now that we've got Biden off the ticket, you know, the stuff we stand for and the person we put in charge is actually a good, reasonable choice. And I saw this with Charlamagne did a video or did a segment on The Daily Show on Comedy Central where he allegedly trashed DEI. But if you really listen to it, he didn't trash DEI. He cracked a few jokes about the stupidity of DEI and then said, but we got to keep doing it because as long as it frustrates conservatives, it's a good thing. It's a gimmick that they're doing. And I think it's all because at some point they're going to remove Joe Biden from the ballot. And these guys will all pivot to championing whoever this new person is. Now, that's the choice. That's change we can believe in.
Yeah, I that's the thing. And I don't understand why Democratic voters aren't infuriated what's going on right now. They weren't able to pick their candidate for the nomination. Joe Biden was selected and nobody ever really had any say it. I mean, I live in Florida and we literally just handed over the delegates to him and we didn't even have an election. And actually, it actually hurt a lot of Democrats in the state of Florida who were on the ballot in November because, well, nobody showed up to vote. And just last month. So it hurt them in the long run. And so it's interesting to see that play out. And there's not many people who are outspoken about it. But I wanted to ask you because, well, it seems like maybe it's being orchestrated independently. Everyone's kind of just by themselves kind of making this moderate switch. Or do you think maybe there's a group of people who are talking to them and saying that this is the way we've got to pull? We've all got to appear as moderates. We've got to pull away from Joe Biden because the switch is coming soon.
I don't think anything Democrats do is organic. I believe it's all orchestrated. It's all planned. They all communicate amongst themselves, particularly with these high-profile, well-compensated influencers from The Rock to Charlamagne to Stephen A. Smith to Chris Cuomo. It's all orchestrated. They're all given talking points, and it's all to create this appearance that, you know, we're moderates. We're the people you can compromise with. We're the people. And there is no compromise with this group. Stephen A. Smith will tell you, hey, take the vaccine. You're an idiot if you don't. Charlamagne will allow Joe Biden to come on his show and tell black people, if you don't vote for me, you're not black. It's one of the most racist, stupid, emasculating things someone could ever say, went unchallenged on his show. And so now that they know that Joe Biden is a liability and they're making all the necessary moves to perhaps get him out of the way and distance themselves from him, because I don't think they see a path to victory with Joe Biden. So now it's safe to come out and pretend like you don't like Joe Biden and pretend like whoever they install will just be Joe Biden's policies with a fresh face on it. And so they don't want to reject the leftism that they now see is clearly like, this is insane. DEI has replaced merit. This does not work for anybody. It leads to chaos. But we're not going to rebuke the party that gave us DEI. We're just going to rebuke. We're going to always tell you, like, yeah, DEI is crazy and it's destroying the country. But don't forget, those conservative people, particularly the white ones, they're racist. And that's much, much worse.
Yeah, I always tell my friends, you know, head out to my Democrat friends. I'm always like, head out to a Trump rally. Just go for the experience. See what you see with your own eyes and then come back to me with your experience. Because I always, working in the media as long as I have, I know that they lie, they like to fearmonger, and they like to push people. So it's really no surprise. I actually wanted your take on something because I thought it was interesting. Last week, Sage Steele made a lot of headlines because she was out saying that, you know, ESPN handed her a script when she was interviewing Joe Biden and said, you can't drift away from the script. It has to be these questions, no follow-ups. Do you think Charlamagne probably didn't follow up and push back on the comments that Joe Biden made in regards to being black and voting for him? Because, well, he also was handed a script and was told that he can't push back. Because it seems like that might be the reason why he was such a softball interview.
Look, everything about the media and journalism has turned into an exchange of access. And the way you maintain access is through softball interviews. And so Charlamagne's just doing what's necessary for him to hey, he had the president, a potential presidential candidate on his show. He wants to have Joe Biden or Kamala Harris on his show in the future. So he's going to protect him during that interview process. That's all part of the deal. This whole explosion of so-called media and the expansion of the platforms. Again, years ago, a president wouldn't sit down with a Cardi B or a Charlamagne. If you go look at Charlamagne's history, it's really checkered, including allegations of rape of a young woman. Presidential candidates used to not sit down with these people, but now they go on any of these platforms to pretend like, oh, I'm inclusive, or to pretend like, oh, I'm giving access to any and everybody. But they're actually giving access to people that they know won't challenge them, aren't trained journalists, have no even desire to be journalists and ask real questions, and just want the access so that they can get a paycheck and become more popular. So Charlemagne's just mimicking the behavior of most of the rest of the media. He's doing anything he can to maintain access. And, you know, the American public pays the price for that.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And it's really frustrating to see, especially as a journalist, you know, when people don't push back, when people just sit there and allow them to spin the narrative as they choose to, it's not journalism. And that's why so many people are frustrated with the corporate media world, because, well, Americans see through it. They really do. Jason, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciated it. Again, folks, his podcast is The Fearless with Jason Whitlock. You guys got to check it out on iTunes. It's a great one. Thank you so much for your time, Jason, today. We greatly appreciate it.
Brianna, thank you for asking me on. Anytime.
You guys, I've said it once before, so I'm going to say it again. Under the Biden regime, I've never been more worried about my financial future. I called my good friend, Dr. Kirk Elliott, because I wanted to come up with a plan put in place to make sure I was secure. And he came up with a plan for me to invest in silver.
I'm rich.
I've got my silver. I'm feeling so much better about my future. I highly recommend you give him a call and just chat with his team. 720-605-3900. And you could also head over to his website if you'd like to schedule an appointment. It's KirkElliottPhD.com/Brianna. I just finished unpacking my latest order from MyPillow, and there's so much to tell you guys about. The new MyPillow 2.0 line is incredible. And it's not just me. Gia and Giuseppe are also loving their MyPillow dog beds. Gia is so obsessed with it. She wants to eat on it, play on it. She literally never leaves her bed. She is loving the MyPillow dog beds, and I'm sure your pups at home would too. And it's just not that. My best friend Allie, I gifted her the new MyPillow slippers, and she's loving it. She describes it as walking on clouds. It's so incredible. So make sure you head over to MyPillow.com and secure up to 66% off. It's an incredible deal. Make sure you use promo code Brianna. That's B-R-E-A-N-N-A. And you guys got to get there now. Once word gets out that these items are all on the market now, the updated ones, well, he's going to sell out quickly. You guys, I actually mean it. Gia, Giuseppe love the dog beds, but that's not the only thing they love, of course. A couple of days ago, I had to give them a bath and I used the MyPillow towels, and Giuseppe was loving it. He was literally, I guess it felt like a hug for him. So he was loving it. I tied it all around him and he didn't want me to take it off of him. So he was really enjoying that. So again, if you guys want to go and support Mike Lindell, who you know is someone fighting for our country, head over right now to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code. You can use Brie. We've made it so simple for you as well. B-R-E. That's it. And that's the best promo code to use right now to secure up to 66% off. You got to head over there and give it a look. If you used his products before in the past, give it a look again, because he's fixed them up. It's like a 2.0 line right now he's got going on. That's what you're going to want to get. I'm telling you, we're loving it. We're loving the bed sheets as well these days, the Giza sheets. So head over there, take a look around, use promo code Brie, B-R-E. Now, you guys, tomorrow we have a jam-packed program for you, of course, so you're not going to want to miss it. Make sure you tune in. We'll be live from Washington, D.C. Have a great evening. Thanks for joining us tonight. And if you enjoyed that segment, make sure you hit that like button. And if you want to see the news before it becomes the news, you have to subscribe to our channel. And, well, if you have a liberal friend that you're looking to save, make sure you share this content with them.